Thank you, Susan. Thank you, organizing committee. It's a real honor to be here today with the other presenters to honor B.L. Allen. I told B.L. just a few moments ago, if it hadn't been for him, I wouldn't be here, because I don't really enjoy presentations these days, but for him, I couldn't turn it down. Anyway, B.L.'s had a major impact on my life also, and made many, many contributions over the half century that we've known each other. I simply want to say that not only my impact on me, but he's served on graduate committees of Larry West, Martin Rabenhorst, and a number of course, others that came through our institution. I'd like to pay tribute to this legendary soil scientist who is a scholar, teacher, research, coach, mentor, and above all, an educator. Hats off, B.L. Today I've been asked to talk just a little bit about the work that we've done on the Edwards Plateau. That's Martin Rabenhorst's sort of area of his PhD work, and the work that Larry West did in the Grand Prairie. You'll see in a few moments these are rather striking different areas. Geologically speaking, we're working with the Upper and Lower Cretaceous, the Edwards Plateau proper. Most of our work was done in the Fredericksburg-Washita group with the Edwards Limestone Formation. In the more stepped terrain, this is a big broad plateau, and we'll show some pictures of later. In the stepped terrain, we were working in the with the Trinity group, and especially the Walnut Clay Glen Rose Limestone. These are areas that are perfectly familiar to B.L. He's worked across this whole landscape. The landforms that are represented are strikingly different. In the Edwards Plateau proper, because of the crystalline, low-residue, weathering-resistant associated limestones, we have a broad plateau. These are some of the sites that Martin Rabenhorst actually sampled on. In contrast, on the eastern edge of the Prairie Plateau and on up north into the Grand Prairie, we have these stepped terrains. They're formed by interbedded, they used to call them soft, but they're really not soft limestones. They're interbedded limestones that are indurated and quite cemented in a fresh high wall, but some of the beds weather and are differentially more easily weathered than others. So the areas that show up here as white bands are ledge former limestones, low residue kinds of systems, and the steep gradient portion of steps are the more weatherable recessive limestone beds. We'll have a little more to say about that later. Well, what were the questions? We had questions about what the parent material of these soils were, what you've already heard about dust contributions, what were they in these areas, origin of the terra rosa, the deep, leached, clay, red soils, what about lithogenic versus pedogenic carbonates? Can we actually differentiate them? What are the soil properties specifically, not only in the landform of the stepped terrains, but on the steps per se? How might these landforms affect soil and bedrock aquitards, and in turn aquitard recharge and environmental impacts from such pedological properties? The pedogenic studies that we set out are quite a few, and I'm going to give you in the next few slides the conclusions, because we may or may not have time to touch on all the rationale for these conclusions. But we did set out to look at possible soil climal sequences on the Edwards Plateau proper, yielding dust properties and contributions, genesis of calcic, petrocalcic horizons. We used a number of tools, in addition to the field tools, I might add, microfabric and stable carbon isotope analysis, SEM of silt grain surface morphologies, mineralogy of silt and clay size separates, mass balance reconstructions of from limestone strata, particle size distribution of carbonate-free and clay-free residues. Then we did some dye monitoring and tracing of hydrology and pathways of water movement, and finally looked at soil stratigraphy and properties of steppe terrain in some additional detail. What did we learn from these studies? Well, in contrast to what John just presented to you, we did not find much evidence in these areas for dust contributions to the soil. The soil in the Edwards Plateau proper associated with that crystalline limestone was judged not to have been the primary parent materials of the overlying upper solar horizons like the A and BK horizons. Some of the evidence for that, but one of the more powerful evidences is that it would have required something like 10 to 100 volumes of dissolution of that limestone to form a unit volume of soil. This didn't seem to be particularly reasonable. And there are some other rationale that go along with that. In contrast, the steppe terrain, those soils have formed from the interbedded limestone. And as I already mentioned, the interbedded limestone results in the stepped landforms because of its differential susceptibility to weathering, not because some of the beds are hard and some are soft. Petrocalcic and calcic horizons are formed by in situ alteration of limestone, not the classic translocation model. That's perhaps certainly one of the pertinent studies, both from Larry West's work and from Martin Rabenhorst's work. And petrogenic carbonates can be differentiated and quantified from lithogenic origins by field, laboratory, and particularly stable carbon isotope analysis. Likewise, in the steppe terrains, riser and trig couplets of steppes are individual hydrologic units. The steppes do not become wetter, or the landscape does not become wetter from upslope to downslope character, as is usually true in Hortonian flow models. Risers serve as local recharge and treads as discharge. So as water, if you think about the hydrologic pathway of water, it infiltrates the risers, discharges on the treads, moves laterally to the next step, and the sequence repeats itself in a cascading manner from upslope to downslope. Aquitards limit soil water recharge, and there are a number of aquitards that by long-term monitoring with tensiometers, piezometers, and other techniques, we found that the argillic, calcic, petrocalcic, and joint plugging of carbonate, cements, and clays in limestone prevents a lot of the recharge that might occur from soils into shallow groundwater aquifers. We found perched ephemeral water tables in these systems, on the average, about 18% of the time of the year. And because of what I've just said, the risers in work that we've done to determine the on-site wastewater suitability of these kinds of landforms, the risers were the preferable site for wastewater application if dosing rates and timing were proper. There's an array of publications, and I won't take any time here except to say these are our publications. There are many geoscience publications covering this same area of landform. But our work started in the early 80s. Publications by West, by Rabenhorst West, joint publications together. We did some additional work on the step terrain with Wilcox and Woodruff. Wilcox is a hydrologist. Woodruff is a geologist, geohydrologist, actually. And then Nobles did some work on dye staining techniques and using bromine in these landforms, and a number of other publications which represent consultancy reports. Well, let's turn our attention just for a moment to the climal sequence that was constructed across the Edwards Plateau proper. We looked at basically moving from a Thornthwaite P minus E index of about 20 to about 50, and moving from drier to wetter regions. We had a progressive decrease in the carbonate content that was present in the surface and subsurface soils. We had a decreasing expression of petrocalcic horizons till we reached a P minus E index of about 38. And we found there that we began to pick up soils that had cambic horizons, were clay, were leached of carbonates over the limestone bedrock, and then on into argillic horizons marked with an X. Well, I tell you this as a climal sequence, but I'll tell you in the next breath that there probably is apparent material confounding influence on this climal sequence. So while the story looks good to start with, it may not be the whole story. But across that so-called climal sequence, we go from soils which are petrocalcids, aridosols, calciustols, haplostols, argiostols. These are the kind of soils that Carolyn Olson, I think, did her PhD work on, not in Texas, but in Indiana, as I recall. But anyway, the point I want to make here is that there is... climate has a big impact on the kinds of soils that we find, but there's also lots of evidence that these thick clay soils, well, thick is perhaps a misnomer, but anyway, that these clay soils were formed only as a consequence of the climatic changes. In contrast, the calciostols and calciosteps that occur on step terrain, generally they have a riser tread, this being the riser, steep gradient riser, and the tread coming off, a low gradient of individual steps. They have wedge-shaped soils, thick soils, and steeper gradient risers, and thin soils in the treads. These are the kind of tippic or eutic calciostols that might occur in the risers, shallow soils often on the treads. But in the landform studies of cross sections of the step terrains, from summits to back slopes to foot slopes. Any one of these kinds of soils can form because they are bedrock control systems. So only in the steppes is there really a systematic sequence of thicker to thinner soils. We did some dust trap work too. This is what our dust traps look like. Dry infall dust traps with polyethylene balls to trap the dust. What did we find? Well, we found no particulate carbonates in the dust. We found that quartz and potassium feldspars were primarily mineral components in the fine-grained silts. Quartz and mica in the clays. And this was differentiated from surface soils in numerous ways, but by mineralogy, particle size distribution, the dust about twice the clay content as the surface soils, silt grain morphologies, which I'll move into right now. These are some examples of potassium feldspar grains in the dust on the Edwards Plateau. We see no weathering along cleavage traces of these potassium feldspars, very highly polished conchoidal surfaces, and rough pitted surface grains. Of quartz, we have similar kinds of things with lots of highly polished conchoidal fracture and then some rough pitted surfaces. In the step terrains, the dust collected there, we again find these conchoidal fractured, highly polished silt-size dust grains. And our surface morphology on the surface horizons are a very rounded configuration that lack the conchoidal fracture cleavage traces we found in the dust. So our conclusions basically are that the soils of the Edwards Plateau and the Grand Prairie do not have, if they had dust inputs, and we recorded those at about a millimeter every 100 years would be the contributions in terms of amounts. Either weren't the surfaces don't seem to have stabilized those dusts in those particular landform regions. Now moving to the evidence or the lack of evidence that the soils of the Edwards Plateau were formed from, in fact, the substrate, the crystalline bedrock substratum. Again, we've used a number of different techniques to approach that. We found all kinds of evidence for lithologic discontinuities between the crystalline bedrocks and the overlying A and B key horizons of these soils. But one sort of marker mineral that was very helpful to us were these euhedral prismatic quartz grains found in the limestone residues that were not found, as you'll see in a moment, in surface horizons of the soils. For example, this is an array of silt, carbonate-free silt residues in surface horizons, but when we get into the BK laminar cap, bedrock region of a laminar cap in bedrock, we begin to pick up these quartz marker minerals. In the R horizons, they're very prominent. So we have concluded for a number of reasons that the crystalline bedrocks were not the parent material of the soils. So that being the case, that leads us basically, if they're not from dust, if they're not from the associated bedrocks, these soils, at least the upper surfaces of these soils, are probably accumulated from weathering products of overlying limestone strata that are no longer present in the system. On the other hand, in the steppe terrains, where we said the soils were formed from the underlying bedrock, one of the useful evidence has been siliceous microfossils that are found in the parent materials of these systems and can be traced through the petrocalcic horizon on up into calcic and into the surface. So we do believe, while the surfaces may be they may be in part colluvial, alluvial, pedosediment in origin over in situ weathering of the recessive limestone beds, we believe these soils are tied to the bedrock geology of the area. Let me take just a moment. How much time do I have?
About 5-6 minutes.
Okay. Let me take just a moment to say something about the genesis of limestone-derived petrocalcic horizons. And basically, I said it was different than the classic translocation model. For formation of petrocalcic and also calcic horizons and steppe terrains, we believe that these horizons are formed by in situ alteration of the bedrock, short-range dissolution reprecipitation. And I'll go through that process, I think, with a figure, because it'll be a little faster. This is the original bedrock. We begin to form some porosity in that bedrock and accumulate rim cements, microtized rim cements in the bedrock. These coalesce and collapse into a convoluted structure. And in this photo, you can see the petrocalcic horizon with the convoluted structure sitting right on top of the limestone bedrock that it's associated with. Another way is from needles that have formed in these soils and both calcic petrocalcic horizons. The coalescing of these needles from a sort of a random fashion into parallel orientation around these pores, compression and consolidation of these coatings around the pores and eventually into a nodular fabric such as we see there. This is a nodular fabric with the evidence of the needles in a microfabric. And basically the contributions, I would say, from the work of Rabenhorst and West is the development of new genesis models that focus heavily on in situ microtization of the limestone bedrock as a major process in calcic and petrocalcic horizon. And the fact that if you do reconstruction analysis of the calcium carbonate equivalent, and these calcic and petrocalcic horizons, you either have less carbonates in those systems than the parent materials or an equal amount. The porosity generates on a volume basis the fact that we have not a net gain in carbonates, as is true with most calcic petrocalcic horizons. We will not rule out, for Curtis Munger and all the other people here, the fact that there may be biological origin of some of the carbonate precipitates. And maybe to take just a moment, to say that we've used stable carbon isotopes heavily in quantifying the amount of pentagenic carbonates in different systems. One of the surprises was in the A and BK horizons, up to 80% of the total carbonates present in those systems are pentagenic, even though they're not visible by eye. And if you look at other features where we have segregated carbonates, you might say, why aren't these values up 100%? Because you're looking at pentagenic carbonates that you've hand sampled. Well, there's always the possibility for lithic inclusions in these samples, plus the possibility that the carbonates were not precipitated in equilibrium with the soil CO2. There may have been some atmospheric contamination, and because the precipitation occurred so close to the surface. I'll take just, what have I got, 2 minutes? Take a couple of minutes and simply say some of the uniqueness of these steps. If you, we've cut hundreds of, or a hundred or more of long trenches across the stepped relief. We find the thickest soils are in these steep gradient risers. Thinnest are in the, on the treads. So we have decreasing soil thickness, biological activity, soil permeability, water storage in going from the steep gradient positions to low gradient positions. On the counter, we have increasing runoff sediment transport from these low gradient positions, increasing hydrologic curves. This verifies that in terms of actual numbers, but I'll not take time to do that. I simply do want to say that in some of the dye staining work, we found that all surface flow is almost like piston flow. It tends to be the norm, though occasionally we get preferential transport of water. This is on a foot slope. It's on a tread, on a riser. Very thin soil, very low penetration of the dye. One of the things that's kind of interesting is that soft fragments have volumetrically about 3 to 30% ability to absorb and hold water, so they shouldn't be excluded when we're looking at water holding capacity of these systems. This is an example of the CR horizon being an aquitard. Sufficient dye was put on these systems that they should have penetrated 3 to 4 times deeper if, in fact, they weren't held up by some sort of an aquitard. Well, I'll simply say reflections on the step terrains I think are quite interesting. There are systematic differences in the soil regolith properties, vegetative patterns, and hydrologic function, with the risers being the thicker, better quality soil conditions. Riser tread microforms essentially independent hydrologic units. Locally, risers are recharge units, treads discharge. There's lower risk of water contamination from incident waters of on-site waste on the risers, and these systems are probably not as environmentally sensitive as commonly attributed. Closing comments. BL, you have enriched the profession. We are all indebted to you for the many contributions of soil science, pedology, and the geosciences. In spite of the rivalry between Texas A&M and Texas Tech, I've always looked to BL for his senior mentorship and guidance and constructive, helpful thoughts in terms of our research. You're recognized, as already said by John Hawley, as the national and global authority, semi-arid land ecosystems. We wish you and all of your students well as they celebrate this honor with you. And would all the students stand up? I'd like to see how many are BL students that are here. Remarkable. I've always thought of BL as the master educator, and I no reason to dispute that. Thank you very much, and I appreciate this honor.